Blue Wire. All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. Hope everyone enjoyed Monday's episode, Everybody Wants Some, one of my favorite episodes on one of my favorite movies, a movie that's not only just like really, really good, really enjoyable, is a definite comfort watch. It's also one of the only movies that has tackled college baseball, the incredible sport of college baseball. I can't believe that we have only really gotten two movies that took a crack at it. Everybody Wants Some is one that just crushed it. Extremely authentic. I don't think I need to tell anyone who listened to Monday's episode how I feel about Everybody Wants Some. The other movie we got was Summer Catch. Summer Catch was not authentic, was not good. And on this Thursday, I'm bringing back a little throwback. Covered it 2 years ago, back just when I had changed the name of the podcast to Big Screen Sports. It was still before I took good notes. It was before I knew really anything about editing. Rough stages of the podcast. Appreciate anyone who has held on since then. I think we've gotten better with age. I think we've aged maybe not like a fine wine, but like an aged steak maybe. I don't know. But here's a little throwback from that episode. It had Goose over at Foul Pole Sports. Foul Pole Sports does a lot of college baseball content. I think they're still around and kicking it. I get notifications about them getting suspended and reinstated from Twitter all the time. That's very curious to me. But this is a bit from that episode, kind of talking about the worst things about Summer Catch, what didn't work. I still admire they took a shot. They used college baseball as a backdrop for a movie. Freddie Prinze Jr., I still admire, seems like a great human being. But this isn't a good movie. It's fun to talk about. It's a little cringy for me to listen to an old episode of this podcast with no notes and much less enthusiasm, I think, than I have now. Still working out the kinks. But I hope everyone enjoys it on this Thursday. On Monday, we've got McFarlane USA with Jeff Perlman and another special guest. Looking forward to dropping that. And if you haven't yet and you've been a listener of this podcast, or even if this is your first episode, I've got the Google survey in the show notes. It takes about 5 minutes. Would help me out a ton with this podcast. So with that, let's throw it back to talking Summer Catch with Foul Pole Sports, and we'll catch you on Monday. Yeah, that was realistic. As far as what wasn't realistic, just to set up some caveats before we go into what's realistic and like before you just think that we're just going to rip this movie apart. I don't think this movie, I always go back to it. Trouble with the Curve is the worst baseball movie because it tried its hardest to make you think that it was a super smart, really serious baseball movie. Made it think that it wanted you to think that it was as smart as like the book Moneyball. This movie isn't trying to do that. Like, this movie isn't hung up on, are we the most, like, a super baseball authentic movie? It was more like, we're going to make a summer rom-com. It's going to be about baseball. We're going to make a shit ton of money. It's going to be good. It actually didn't make much money. But on paper, Freddie Prinze Jr., Jessica Biel should have made a lot of money.
100%.
But again, the reason I started this podcast is it drives me crazy when people make sports movies and don't do a good job with this stuff. So, the biggest issue for me, or at least something that there's no concept of time in the movie. You don't know how far into the season they are at any point. Like when Billy's struggling, when Billy's hitless. Okay, well, is Billy hitless? Has he been hitless for a week? Yeah. Has he been hitless for the entire month of June? That would make a huge difference into how we're watching him freak out. We never know at what point in the season and or how long Ryan's been pitching or anything like that. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, and he ended up getting up to like 296, which is unbelievable. It seemed like it made it sound like he was hitless for like 2 weeks at least. And then to get back, like if you're hitless for 2 weeks and you really only got like five or six more, like getting it above the Mendoza line's a miracle, let alone 296.
Yeah, I mean, like think about what Chris Davis went through to start this year.
Right.
Like it would take Chris Davis a lot of hits to get up to 296 even now. So. It was just really disappointing that they didn't kind of lay out what was going on. They didn't even, give you a feel of what time it was in the season, which I think could have made the movie better. I'm also confused about Ryan's eligibility. They say he got kicked out of Boston College and kicked out of like that Framington State.
Right.
or whatever. Like, did he use all 4 years? It sounds like he was, you know, just kicked out of two schools pretty quickly.
Yeah, that kind of is a plot hole because it's the Cape, if that makes sense. If there's mm-hmm. if it's just a random summer ball league, that doesn't really matter because, like, I played on teams where, like, the guys graduated and so he had no more eligibility left to play college baseball, but he still wanted to play baseball, still wanted to try and make indie ball. So he was playing summer ball, playing college summer ball because there's really no rules. Now, the Cape's a whole different. If you don't have any eligibility left, you're probably not going to be able to get into the Cape. It's a whole different ball game, right? But yeah, that did seem bizarre. It seemed like he was like, he doesn't have any eligibility left, and if he doesn't make it this summer, he's not going to play baseball anymore, which doesn't really work in the Cape aspect because it's like so exclusive just to get an invite, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're not really giving invites to guys who got kicked out of Framingham State or whatever it was. He would have had to have gone to one of those lesser summer ball leagues and just try to light up a radar gun and get someone to sign him.
Exactly.
And the biggest issue with the movie, I think, is that Freddie Prinze Jr. just isn't good. I think that's like the crux of the movie, is that Freddie Prinze Jr. is not good at baseball. He doesn't look good in the uniform. He doesn't throw the ball well. He doesn't strike you as a pitcher, and that's really frustrating to watch.
Yeah, it is tough. It looks like a JV player at best. You know what I mean? JV high school. Doesn't fill out the uni. Doesn't look like he ever really played, which is unfortunate because I do like him as an actor.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Freddie Prinze Jr. Like, loved him in Scooby-Doo. But, I mean, he was he wasn't cast because, you know, again, this is like a teenage rom-com kind of movie. You know, the casting in 2011, they weren't casting, you know, focusing on, hey, we're going to cast a super serious baseball player. So, you know, that is what it is, but it is kind of what you come back to, is that Freddie Prinze Jr. can't really throw the ball and his delivery looks stiff. What else didn't work for you? What wasn't realistic?
Just, I mean, little things that bothered me when I was looking at it, a critical eye. That first practice, they were like throwing bullpens, and it seemed like they threw like four pitches and then just like tossed to the next guy. And was like, you're up, bud. That type of deal, which like doesn't, I mean, you're going to throw a full 20 pitch bullpen probably at least. And when you're probably going to be you, your catcher and the pitching coach is all.
Yeah. They definitely breeze through those pens. What did you think about him sleeping on the field?
Yeah, I had that written down. That's just a psycho move.
it's fucking awful.
Like what? That, I mean, what? You can't set an alarm. Like, and then you still were late, so it didn't even work.
Yeah, you got to know that it's going to be just the worst call ever. Like, nothing good is going to come of that, especially when your fucking friends from high school know that you're there, and you just know that's not going to end well. Also, how do you not wake up when the sun comes up if you're sleeping outside?
Oh, you're hammered drunk, I guess. But
just so tough.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in 2001 with no cell phone alarm, and it's an 8 a.m. practice. I mean,
that's suicide.
I would never. I mean, you're probably going to wake up when the sun wakes up, I guess, but like, not if you're drinking.
A lot of, and it started with, this started with that scene, a lot of bad, like, Massachusetts accents in this movie. And Freddie Prinze Jr. completely disappears towards the end of the movie. He goes from, like, I'm going to try to be a Massachusetts, he was like, I'm going to try to be a Massachusetts guy, like, early in the movie. By the end of it, it's done. Freddie's back to L.A. Freddie was mentally back to L.A. before the movie wrapped.
That's fine. I mean, it was so bad of accents, I didn't really notice that they were trying to do accents, I guess. Occasionally his buddies had a little stop the car in them, but that's it.
Yeah, the buddies kept it up all movie. They kept the Massachusetts thing up. You mentioned this earlier about Van Lemer wouldn't even be pitching in the Cape. His first game he throws a CG. Like, his agent would have a heart attack.
Right. Unless it's a 90 pitch CG, right? Like, that's probably not gonna happen. Yeah. You're on strict innings and pitch limits at that.
Yeah,
at that
even point. In 2001.
100%.
If you have a $2 million price tag on you, even in 2001, you're getting treated with kid gloves.
Yeah, I mean, those guys, the best guys, they'll finish their season in June. They'll go home for 4 or 5 days, and then they'll go to the Cape for, let's say their coach wants 35 innings, like, or that might be a little low, but 40, 50 innings. Like, once he hits that innings, like, he's gone. Doesn't matter if they're, like, Burks in the first in the division or whatever, like, sorry, dude, I got no more bullets in my arm for this year, because in all reality, this doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but Van Lamer's just out there throwing CGs and flipping a coin with his $2 million every time he goes out to the mound.
Exactly, exactly.
What else did you have? What else did you have written down for not so realistic? There's a lot of nitpicky stuff, like fun nitpicky stuff in this movie.
Like I said, the directors at least they felt like they knew the gist of the cape, but they didn't. I don't know if they were ever played baseball. Like the little thing when he did the, I don't know what, like he shook off the catcher a bunch and then he did like the middle finger and twirled it around. And that meant a slider. I don't know. Like he threw it down and away to a lefty. Like what, like kind of like unwritten rule. Not that it ever really happens. I've never had it given to me, but like the middle finger is usually like throw it at the dude's back.
Yeah. Plunk a guy.
But even then, like, that's kind of like just like, hey, that's what it means. You're never going to get it. But like, that's what it means. I don't know how that suddenly means slider down and away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't. It would be like he'd be having to read his mind or something.
Exactly. It's like, hey, we've worked on this one pitch. Like, oh, let's bring it out in the third inning. Like, it's just out of nowhere.
Did you notice when Ryan gives up the bomb, the announcer said something about it's a bomb, and the ball like was a fence scraping 310-foot home run?
Oh, it looked like a guy was standing in short left field and just like threw it. That's what the ball looked like when it was going over the fence. Like it didn't have the trajectory of a home run, you know?
No. Yeah. That's like a telltale sign of baseball movies that kind of took shortcuts to get things is none of the balls, their trajectory looks right.
And another little thing is when all these actors were swinging and missing, like they were missing the ball by like 18 inches. Like they were not even close.
Especially when Billy's going through his slump. I mean, he's dying out there. Like he can't even sniff the ball.
Yeah, he's swinging with a blindfold.
Ryan's the start that he has where he goes 9 innings. And this gets me to another point too. Was the manager the worst? Was he the worst bullpen manager of all time? He wouldn't pull anyone. Ryan's dying out there. He's in the 9th inning. He's loaded up the bases. Like bring in that closer, man. Like get the guy out of there. He's probably throwing 150 pitches.
Yeah, it seems like they just didn't. They didn't have the cast capacity for a bullpen. Like they had the one closer that slept the whole time. That was it.
Yeah, it was like him, the closer that slept a night. Ryan and Van Lemer, the only players on the team, the only pitchers on the team. It was just, it was those guys are nothing. But Ryan's start where they're like, this is it was a disastrous start. It went 9 innings, 5 hits, 3 walks. So that's a whip of less than 1.
Exactly.
Gives up 5 runs, but most of them are on that bomb in the 9th when he's just dead out there and should have been pulled anyways. It's a really good start. If you threw 9 innings in the cape with a whip of lower than 1, that's amazing.
100%. Like he should be going away from that game like, oh, we lost, but I definitely got paid today. And at least we're not going to make the playoffs like that. That should be more of that's what an actual guy that was playing. Now it's a little different because he lives in the Cape, but so he's already at home. So he's not waiting to get home. But I mean, you throw 9 innings. There's going to be a ton of scouts there. Like that's a win regardless of what the score is. Cause the score doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If they were going to make Ryan fail or like have his start bad, like they should have had him not get out of the second inning or something.
Yeah.
Like he throws 3 good innings and it's like in the 4th, like, oh, Ryan Dunn's in trouble. And then he gets, he gets lit up and he gets pulled. Not he gets all the way to the 9th. Like I can count on one hand how many times I almost threw a CG in my life. Like that's an incredible feat, especially in the Cape Cod League.
I'd like to go look at like last year's Cape stats, how many CGs there were. I bet you it's less than 5.
Oh, 100. Yeah, no way. I mean, especially because coaches don't want their guys to go that far.
Right, and it's just that rare one where you got a sinker baller out there. He gets an 87-pitch complete game. It's like, well, I'm going to take you out. But
yeah, just a dude pitching to contact gives the bullpen a rest. What else did you have written down?
When Billy broke the bat over his knee, I mean, what are you doing? You're not Bo Jackson. Like that looked like a maple bat. Like there's zero chance Billy Brewbreaker String Beans breaking a bat over his knee.
Billy Brewbreaker looked like he weighed a solid 170 sopping wet.
100%.
And that takes massive strength. What did you think about the kind of the subplot of Van Lemer and his buddy being like massive dicks and talking shit to Ryan. Like, we probably both had teammates we didn't like. I don't think I've ever blatantly told someone, like, I'm not rooting for you. You're going to get murdered tonight. Like, that guy, that team's going to kill you.
Yeah, that just doesn't, even in summer ball, it's just like, if you don't like a guy, you just don't talk to him, right? It's like, you're not going to, I don't know. It just seemed, but I think is more a decision they had to make for the movie rather than the baseball, because you have to have an antagonist, right? But yeah, it's just, no, there's not really going to be that type of thing. In there, another thing I wanted to point out was like the last scene, which I was at, when I was looking at this through a critical eye, like the whole movie made sense in terms of like this Cape Cod and like how this like baseball to an extent. It was like badly shot in terms of like the how the players looked and stuff, but the whole gist of it worked until the last game when he just leaves and then the reliever's asleep on the bench. He's like, "Hey, get in here and pitch." He's like, oh.
It turned into a very, like, corny, fake feeling thing.
Yeah. He's like, get in here and pitch. He's like, well, I've been sitting on the bench for 2.5 hours. I'm not going to get in there and throw 95 like I do in one pitch. Like, that just doesn't happen.
I don't think the ump's going to give me more than 8, because this is not an injury. This is you going fucking crazy and just leaving the field.
Exactly. I just, that was when I was like, that was when I went from, yeah, it looks weird, but it's pretty accurate, to like, okay, let's be serious here.
Yeah, they went for the ultimate cheesy ending. The last thing I've got is I don't think Hank Aaron's out there scouting in the Cape.
I had that written down too, and I think that has to be just like an Easter egg for baseball fans, right? Because they don't address that it's Hank Aaron.
Yeah, it definitely was an Easter egg. There's no they're just like, hey, you know, he was probably around. They flew him out for the movie, treated him really nice for a day, but Hank Aaron's not sitting out there with a radar gun scouting Ryan Dunn.
You have the main scout kind of like look at, like, he, it was kind of cool though how it's like the main scout like was not expecting to see Hank Aaron either though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was like without saying, "Whoa, that's Hank Aaron," he was like, "Holy shit." Like, why the hell is Hank Aaron right next to me?
Yeah, he definitely put on his best oh shit face.
Yeah.